After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
Welcome to the Metta Hour with Sharon Salzberg, where Buddhist wisdom meets everyday life. This podcast is brought to you by the Be Here Now Network and features interviews with the top leaders, teachers, and thinkers of the mindfulness movement and beyond. For more information, visit BeHereNowNetwork.com/Sharon.
Hi, I'm Sharon Salzberg, and I'm here today with two very close friends, Mirabai Bush and Raghu Marcus. We've gathered together just a little bit of time after the passing of our beloved friend Ramdas. We're, of course, all feeling the loss of such a close friend, and so many in our community are grieving the loss of their teacher. So I thought it would be really good to come together, both to honor and remember Ramdas, but also to talk about how we walk through this moment. Mirabai Bush and Raghu Marcus, if you don't know them, are both longtime board members of Love, Serve, Remember, the nonprofit that houses Ramdas's teachings. Mirabai also recently co-wrote the book, Walking Each Other Home, Conversations on Loving and Dying with Ramdas, which was released in 2018. So thank you both for joining me, and what a moment in time.
Really?
So Mirabai, I know the exact time you first met Ramdas because I was there. So maybe we'll start with you and then I'll turn it over to you, Raghu. So at the time you were Linda.
I was.
Yeah.
Linda Thurston. I was, and it was in Bodh Gaya in India. Actually, I met you like a few days before. Mm-hmm. By chance, on the street in New Delhi. And now people say, how could that have happened?
Right. You know? Well, this is all pre-internet.
Yeah, I know. So yeah, it really was.
Everything was that way.
Exactly. So we just bumped into each other. We'd actually been at the same school, but we didn't know each other there. But we'd heard about each other, I think, or something. Anyhow, we met, and you told me that there was going to be this first meditation retreat for Westerners. And I hadn't really gone to India to learn meditation. I just was wandering the world trying to make sense out of the terrible state that the United States was in at that time with the Vietnam War and civil rights. But I thought, well, I'm in India. That might be cool. So I went. And that day when we both arrived in Bodh Gaya, I remember seeing just outside the walls of the Vihara, or the monastery, there were this group of guys talking, and they were very animated, and they were all already wearing long, flowing white clothes. And I was, I think, in my hippie clothes from Istanbul, you know. They looked really incredible. That my first thought was like these biblical images of the apostles, you know. So I went closer to hear what was going on. And what I heard was Ramdas, who was one of these people, trying to decide how many cookies he should buy before we went into the retreat, because there wouldn't be any sweets. And then I thought, everything's going to be okay. Yeah, and then you and I and Joseph Goldstein and so many, Rick Krishnadas and so many others, we sat in meditation for a few months.
Yeah.
and our lives were changed forever.
Yeah. And then Raghu, you know, when I read Parvati's book, you'll have to remind me of the name of it.
Love Everyone.
Love Everyone. Thank you. I was really struck by, you know, I mean, what I just said to Mirabai is so true. There was no internet in those days, which would be a natural way. You'd find out, oh, there's this great teacher, you know, down the street or, you know, in the other part of India. And it's like it was all the happenstance of the magic of how you found out and who you found out from. But in reading that book, I thought about the radio, which was like the radical way of that time. And that's how you first encountered Ram Dass, right?
Yeah, exactly. They wanted, and, you know, it wasn't the internet, but we did have 50,000 watts behind us there in that station in Montreal. So it did had real reach for sure. But they wanted me to announce that Ram Dass was giving a lecture at McGill University in Montreal, and I didn't know, I had never heard that name before.
You had your own show, is that what it was?
Well, I was running the station. I was the program director, and I had a show on the weekends. So it would have been up to me. That's why they sent it to me, to say yay or nay in terms of the DJs actually promoting it. So I just said, well, I love Leary and Alpert, but send me a tape. And they sent a tape over, and then it's just my story is everyone's story. Those words just got deep inside, and I recognized them as a trust that was nuts because I never met this person. I never heard him before. And then I went out and I said, I got to meet this guy. And I went out and he was staying in Montreal in a duplex. And he was actually staying with, of course, old time satsang and close friends of ours and my first wife, Parvati Marcus, who wrote this book, and Radha Baum, of all things, which I didn't find out till later. But anyhow, he opened the door and let me in. And I've been saying this, I've been telling this story often related to the movie that we've done around Ram Dass called Becoming Nobody. And it was my reference point to what that really means, because in the moment that I met Ram Dass, he put Richard Alpert aside, he put Ram Dass aside. And, you know, we all know this. Anybody who's ever encountered him, where he just encounters you with his eyes, and it's like there is no one else in the universe, just you, and he is completely embracing and giving full attention to you. So that, to me, was the shining example of becoming nobody. He did that from that first second that I met him, and he did it till the last second, when just a few weeks ago when I left Maui. And he just became extraordinarily present in a way that was like just an overwhelming experience of unconditional love, really. And so that was that's his legacy throughout his life. He's done that I am, as in my role as the director of Love, Serve, Remember Foundation, I am seeing the mail coming in, the emails and regular mail. And it's extraordinary just how many people are just, I owe him everything. And it's the same thing I say. Just for what he gave was so profound.
So what year was that you met him? I know I was called Jolinda Mirabai in January of 1971.
Yeah, so for me, 69-70 winter, just something like that. Yeah, I think the beginning of 70 probably was exactly the date. As a result of then playing tapes of Ram Dass on the station, it was a freeform station, so we could do what we wanted. Many, many people from that area ended up, some of them at the meditation course, actually. So it was seeing into the future for me in terms of what I'd be doing as well, because I'm doing what I was doing then. Now I'm doing the same thing, which is just sharing Ram Dass and all of the teachers that we've been associated with and close to for all of these years. Now, of course, through the vehicle of the magic of the web. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was quite a meeting for me in that moment.
Mm. Well, Mirabai, now thinking about this book, which will have been Ram Dass's last book, perhaps, unless Raghu takes the archives of something and makes another
book. No. He's going to, he had been working on with Rameshwar Das for years. They have been working on a memoir, and that will be coming out at the beginning of 2021.
Okay, so Mirabai, the penultimate book, perhaps. Yes. I'm thinking of Trungpa Rinpoche, where they seem still writing from the grave, you know. And so death was the topic, and from a lot of different angles, I'm sure. So did you write about grief in that?
We did. We wrote about grief and grieving, and I just reread that section today. And, you know, everything that he said and that we said there, it works.
That's good to know.
I had grieved several people since we wrote the book.
Yeah.
Several good friends have died. But, of course, this was the biggest one. And I just, Ram Dass knew so much about grieving. I didn't know so much. When I wrote the book, I hadn't known that many people who died. But he really understood it. And mainly he understood that it's different for everybody. It takes its own time. You've got to give yourself space to do it. And then at a certain point, the grief leaves and the open space is open for love. And that's when another level of being, of that person being really present for you happens. I mean, the grieving is a function of love. It changes over time. And even in this last week, I watch it change, you know. So, yeah, he was, you know, when we started writing the book, I went back and read Be Here Now, which, as you remember, came out while we were in that monastery.
Yeah.
It was one copy of it. Now in these days of you know, like limitless copies of everything, the idea that there was one copy in a box, and then we had to pass it around. But I went back to it when I was writing this book with him, and I read what he had said there on dying. It's amazing. It was all there. It was all there. Mm. His knowing of it, his holding it, him personally like living it, and his body changed, of course, over the years, and especially after his stroke. But the words were all there from the beginning. Quite amazing.
Wow. Yeah. Mm. Wow, that is amazing.
Don't you? I just want to interject something, because you were talking about grief and after at a certain point you have to let it be and just be in it, and at a certain point you start to come out of it, and love is the profoundness of the love that one shared with the departed person is much more self-evident. I guess I've been experiencing very specifically what Ram Dass used to talk about all the time. You can live, we as humans can be on more than one plane at the same time. And I have been experiencing, of course, the grief and so much, it's such an accumulation of time with Ram Dass in so many different ways, from being in India back in the day when we followed him back there to this most recent time when he's been in Maui. And there is a way in which I'm feeling both things, I wouldn't say simultaneously, but in a way that they're not so separate. It's a kind of a funny feeling, actually. And I just because he was so He was so ready. I mean, we talked about this, and of course, Mirabai, you did that whole book and talked about it with him more than anyone, but we did talk to him about it. You know, I spent a month with him in the summer, and we did spend time talking about this. And in fact, we talked a little bit about it in reference to the psychedelic trips that he's taken over his life, and how Richard Alpert would get eradicated, and how what that meant to him in that moment, and what it means to him in these moments, as it was just months before he left. What do you think, Sharon, particularly about the reality of going through grief and then at the same time really feeling the depth of the love of that person who more of the true self that you're really connecting to?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, just like Mirabai said, the grief is a sign of the love, but it, as the kind of state of, you know, being shattered or the sense of loss is maybe the most overwhelming thing at times, but then we touch something different. Actually, you, Raghu, gave me my map in a way. As you know, I think many people know, I've been spending some time lately in communities of people affected by gun violence. And I can remember watching the live stream of something where this man, Fred Gutenberg, who lost his daughter at Parkland, was speaking. And he said, actually, Joe Biden gave him the map after he lost his daughter. He said, look for meaning every day. And he said, that's how I survive, you know. And so his expression of meaning, I mean, many of the parents have foundations for their kids. So in his case, his daughter was a dancer, so there are dance scholarships. And then, of course, there's gun laws. And, you know, look for meaning. Like, and he said, that's the map. Yeah. And I remember when I found out Ramdas had died, I went next door to my friend, my colleague, Joseph Goldstein. We live in the duplex, to tell him. But Mirabai was on the phone with him already. So he looked up at me and he said, Ramdas died. And I said, well, I know. That's why I came over here. You know. So he put her on speakerphone. And then as soon as she hung up, you, Raghu, called. And he put you on speakerphone. And you said something in that conversation like he was serving people till his last breath. You know, he was taking care. He was thinking of other people his last breath. And I thought, okay, that's my map. You know, that's my inspiration.
That's great.
Every day.
You know, when I asked him about, we did a section on regrets and letting go before you die, you know. And I asked him if he had any regrets, and I thought he was going to say, as he would have or did in the past, like, oh, no, that's psychological. I don't have regrets, you know. But he didn't say that. He said, yeah, I have two. The first is that whenever I start talking about Ram Dass, I talk in that really slow voice, you know.
Lots of pauses.
he said the first was... The first is that I regret not being able to be a vehicle for Maharaji's teachings anymore. And that was very sweet to put it that way, you know. And then he said, and I regret that my death is going to make a lot of people sad, and I don't want to do that. And I know in the past many times he would say, especially around goodbyes, he said, ah, you know, don't waste your time being sad. You know, we'll see each other again or we won't, you know. But it was very tender. Yeah.
Here's something else for everybody's map. You just said something that triggered me. You guys know that I spend time in India a lot and spend time with this a jungle Baba, and somebody asked him a question about loved ones departing and how to handle it, and talking about grief and just what we're talking about right now. And he said, you know, you got to be kind and tell your soul. And in Hindi, the expression is fear malenge. We will meet again. It's okay. We will meet again. And I just love that. That's been my mantra here since one of them since Ram Dass left. We will meet again.
In the soul pod.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, for many people, like myself, for example, unlike for the two of you, you know, I never met his guru, Neem Karoli Baba, in the body. Mm-hmm. And so when you say Ram Dass had some regret about not being able to transmit or help people, it's such a powerful moment in time, given that so many people have been influenced by his guru never having met him. And now there's a legacy.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Yes.
And just to say, of course, he's completely wrong. He was wrong. And
so
the
wrong.
Reality is it is all happening and moving forward. We are part of the inundation is how do we continue to share with you all? And Ram Dass will be shared for a long time to come, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's such the thought of a legacy is such a strange thought because one just lives one's life, you know, and there's like that immediate sense of, you know, I was at Ram Dass's house once when he was living in California and with Joseph and a bunch of people, and he was like, I'm not answering the phone, I'm not going to see anybody but you guys, we're just going to spend this time together. And then he got a message, you know, and it was the answering machine days. And
right.
So everyone could hear this message that was coming through. Hi, I got your number. You don't know me. And, you know, and I'm really sad and nothing's working. And I just don't know if it's worth living. And his hand went out. He picked up that phone, you know, and he had a conversation with somebody. Mm. And, it was kind of this remarkable moment in time where you just saw, okay, you know, he's going to be completely responsive. And it's been so interesting for me. Like I was home in Barry, Mass when I'd heard he died. And then I was working on my taxes on my desktop computer for days. Death and taxes. And the notifications kept coming into my desktop. Oh. CNN, Ram Dass, Eastern Guru dies. You know, and it was just like to see even vaguely just the reach of his influence. And, you know, because I just knew him in that personal way.
Yeah.
You know, not the foundation or.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, especially over the years at Center for Contemplative Mind, where we were introducing for the first time contemplative practices to all kinds of professionals, lawyers and judges and business CEOs and journalists. So I meet people who seemed completely into their role as a leader of something in society, you know. And so often people would say, often they would come up to me privately and say, Ram Dass changed my life.
Yeah.
Sometimes I realized I had the thought, he maybe didn't quite change it enough. No, but there, just it always was amazing to me wherever I would go. And he touched so many people. Really amazing.
Mm. You know, the way that he, Sharon, you were talking about him just stopping and somebody called.
Yeah.
The way that he did that all the time is really staggering when you think it goes back to this becoming nobody concept of putting yourself aside in service for somebody else. But I remember once in L.A., I was, you know, after the stroke and I was wheeling him. He had done a little something at an event for a couple of days. And I was wheeling him, and wheeling the wheelchair, and I saw that he was tired, right? Mm-hmm. He had been up there for a couple of hours, and he was tired, and so I got into I'm going to get him through this crowd and up to his room like now. Right. And
I can imagine.
You guys know me, and you can imagine. That's right. So I'm pushing the wheelchair, and suddenly somebody comes out, and just, you can see the depth of how much they just wanted to connect with him just for a moment. And he's got to go up to his room, and I'm pushing. Ram Dass slammed on the brake, looked back at me like, shut up and stop. And he stopped for this person and just gave everything in that moment. Mm-hmm. And we've seen it. How many times have we seen it at these retreats in Maui with him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Where we're trying to clear the way, but he will not do that.
Yeah.
And talk about to the last breath. Mm-hmm. I'm not kidding. So before we do, everybody out there who doesn't know, we do a mala ceremony. We have done with Ram Dass. And he, over the years, he's given a mala out to every person, 300-400 people in the retreat, and completely embraces them, every person. Sometimes, I mean, physically embracing, not just with his eyes. And so as he had gotten a little bit more fragile, we convinced him this past time, okay, so you'll just stay up on, you know, you'll be up on the stage and you'll bless everybody, but you won't be giving a mala to everybody because you just don't have that kind of energy anymore. And he said, okay, all right. You know, he acquiesced begrudgingly. Mm-hmm. So the thing's about to start. I'm down there with him before he's going to go up on stage, but he's in the front and he's going to bless the malas, which was the plan. And he turns to me and he goes, so I'm going to give them out to everybody, right? I go, no, you're not giving them out. You know, like I'm his dad or something. You can't do that. We already discussed this. What's wrong with you? And he looked at me, he pursed his lips, right? And he looked at me like a small child being chastised that he couldn't have his chocolate, you know, couldn't have his ice cream. And his ice cream was being able to be with every person in that place, mm-hmm. and give everything he had. And that's who he is.
Mm-hmm. There was I don't know if you heard this story, Sharon, yet, but during the retreat also earlier, he couldn't really speak much at all during the retreat. But he wanted to be up there this day. And so we decided what he could do was lead his favorite meditation, I Am Loving Awareness. And it was the end of a session, and so he led I Am Loving Awareness over and over. And then finally he fell silent, and his head kind of dropped down. And we were there in silence for a while. And then I was sitting next to him, so I said, Ram Dass, everyone has to go to lunch now. Is there anything that you want to say before, or you want us to say before? It's before they go. And he pulled his head up, and he had that mischievous smile on his face. And he lifted up his hand, his one hand that works, and he gave this little wave. And there were 400 people in the place, and every person spontaneously waved back.
Oh,
it was so great. And then he waved again. So he did it like 3 or 4 times. And then at the end, he said, conducting a symphony of love.
Oh,
great.
That's so beautiful.
It was.
Yeah. That's so beautiful. I mean, one of the things that always struck me after Ram Dass had the stroke, which was what, 97? 1997?
I think so.
Was, you know, if you watch, like in this most recent movie, which had a lot of footage pre-stroke, his superpower was really words.
Yes.
You know, his articulation was beyond imagination. It was really like a golden tongue. And then he had the stroke, and it was such a struggle to find the words. And I thought, he got up there anyway.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't like hide away or...
Yeah.
You know, say, well, I've lost it now. You know, I'm a fraction of what I once was. You know, I can't appear in front of people. It was like, he was just out there. And there was It didn't feel like he was embarrassed or, you know. And as you know, both of you, you know, being on the stage with him when there'd be one of those pauses and you knew damn well what he was trying to say. And it was so tempting just to provide the word, you know, and you know, I can't do that. I have to say quietly, find it.
Well, that reminds me, he hated that when you, and we stopped doing that like about a minute after the stroke. So we were writing a part about aging in the book. And so I asked him, I said, do you feel old? And he said, no, I identify with my soul. I don't feel old. I feel eternal. But he said, but yesterday when we were on that phone conversation, I was being interviewed by a journalist, and a friend of mine was on the call too. And when I would stop for words, she would finish the sentence, and he said, that made me feel old. Mm. And I said, but you, how do you usually feel? And he said, I feel fucking rad. and just the day before, someone had said that he thought Ram Dass was fucking rad, and Ram Dass had to ask his caregivers, you know,
what does that mean?
What does that mean? And then it became part of his vocabulary in 24 hours.
That's fantastic. Well, Roger, you run this network. Can we use that word on the network?
No, he's in charge.
It's okay. He's in charge. If Roger says this is okay, it's okay.
Yeah, we're okay. All of what we're talking about right now and what you're pointing out, when you say he did not have any qualms about mm-hmm. getting up there, even though he had a fraction of the ability to express that he used to. And so I think courage comes into this big time. I mean, Ram Dass has such a huge, courageous heart and undefended heart. And he was not going to hide away ever. And and at the same time, though, he was absolutely honest mm-hmm. about everything. Like he would, you know, sometimes he would get mad or at people who were wanting to help him. And in any way, even if it was just eating food or whatever it may be. And he'd get angry. And he would talk about how it was so difficult to surrender to having people take care of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, all the way through, all the way through, you know, he'd give you that look, okay, keep your hand out of this, okay? And one time at a retreat, again, I was pushing the wheelchair, and it was on the Big Island, Mirabai, I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
Anyhow, we had to go he had a house that was just next door to another house, which had the kitchen. So he'd come up there to eat. And so it was dark or something, and I was pushing the wheelchair. This is just terrible. I don't know why I'm thinking about it. On the path, but I went off the stone and it kind of like hit a rut. He went flying out of the wheelchair.
Oh, my God.
Onto the ground.
Oh, it's like a nightmare.
Yeah. And he looked at me. He said, are you really serious? That, you know, wait till you're in this thing, okay? He was really out of it. I guess, right next to courage, when you speak about Ram Dass and his legacy, is, of course, humor. And we had a big laugh about that one, I'll tell you that.
That's pretty great. Well, I'm also struck by, like, at the time of his death, it seemed to me, from what I gathered, that so many of you, his oldest and closest friends, not quite all of you, but so many of you had just left.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Probably not a coincidence.
I'm sure not.
Yeah.
And it's kind of...
There's so many stories about people dying, you know, when their beloveds leave the room for 20 minutes
or
whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to break away when people who love you so much are there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was very striking, you know, that was you left like 5 days before or something.
Yeah. And we knew. We knew. I mean, all just seeing that body which had become so skeletal and how difficult everything was and how much pain it was in. And yet, you know, like the last moment when I just had this moment of tsunami of unconditional love that just went beyond our personalities, that's for sure. And I walked out of there and I look back and I go, and I wasn't thinking that with that momentous event and how I knew how, you know, how fragile he was, I wasn't thinking, why didn't I turn around and say, wait, I don't have to go anywhere right now. You know, of course, this is Monday morning quarterback kind of stuff. But and the reality is whoever was supposed to be there was perfect in that moment. But, yeah, most of us left.
Yeah. But, you know, we thought so many times over the years that he couldn't go on, you know.
Yeah.
And in the spring, we really thought he was dying. I had never done this. I jumped on a plane like 8 hours after I heard that he was dying and went to Maui and got there, and it really seemed like he was dying. He was in the bed. He was so pale, and he was just breathing in a strange way. And then they gave him some, I forget if they changed his meds or they gave him saline solution, something for some hours. And so then the next morning, he came down to breakfast.
Mm.
And so I said...
It's so nice of you to visit me nearby.
I said, Ramdas, I just got a text from Zach Leary, Tim's son. I said, he wants to know how you are. What should I tell him? He said, tell him I was dying and I changed my mind. I think you did.
Yeah, it's probably true. So we have a few minutes left together. Let's talk a little bit about legacy. And I mean, it strikes me also when I think about people who got to know Neem Karoli Baba, it was through people or it was through chanting, you know, and there's a wealth of Ram Dass material, you know, like you can actually go to YouTube or something and there are the books and the recordings and everything you're doing, Raghu, to keep this alive. So as well as there being a sense of lineage, and the lineage is very rich. One of the postings on Facebook I liked the most from Dasima, who was like his long-term caregiver, was, you know, once Ram Dass had died and they were doing pujas and prayers, and she said, we've had a Tibetan Lama and a Franciscan monk and a rabbi and a Sufi master, and you know, and this whole long list of various people come by. But this is a time when, you know, in addition to the kind of lived reality of the way someone affects other people and the way they then carry that out, there is actually a body of teaching that can be accessed very directly. So it's a very special opportunity as well.
Yeah, and again, I think I mentioned it earlier when we first started chatting here, a tremendous amount of people wanting to know how it is that they can continue or we can continue to share in Sangha, Satsang, community. And so this is, of course, the most, to me, the most important part of the legacy is what Ram Dass created when he came back from India the first time in 68 and started giving those talks, and how people came together around that, how people came together. The model was how we would go to his father's farm. You know, spend weekends there and get together and do all the different kinds of practices that he was engaging in and he brought back, from Sufi dancing to chanting, meditation, all of it. And how that continued through the decades in many different venues, from what he did at Omega and places like that. And then it continued after the stroke when he finally moved to Maui. And of course, we've been doing those retreats there a couple of times a year. And now, and we've been doing them in the more recent years in Ojai, California, where Love, Serve, Remember is located at this point. So that is the most important thing that that we can fulfill as a foundation and representing this vast amount of teachings. And by the way, there are not just Ram Dass. There are all of us that have been working with him. You know, you've been with him, as you just described, since those days in Bodh Gaya, and Jack and Joseph and all of us. So that is going to continue. And in fact, you know, Ram Dass, one of the things that really, a number of years ago, he said, well, let's make sure that these teachings and this legacy and Maharaji is made available on platforms that next generation are used to going to and will go to and be able to participate. And of course, that's when the whole thing with everything we're doing, from ramdass.org to BeHereNowNetwork.com, which this podcast is emanating from, the movie, the books, and all of it come together and can be shared in a way, in many different ways. In what we do in Maui at these retreats that we do there, we're going to continue to do those with you all, everybody. Mm-hmm. And we'll probably go, and these immersions will be done where we use Ram Dass's media to form a centerpiece around which we everybody participates, the Dharma teachers and the students that come. And that those will happen around the country as well. And I guess I want to just say, since you brought this up, Sharon, that we are going to have a moment that Mirabai is going to lead us on January 22nd, a moment of presence, of being here now, honoring Ram Dass. And so that'll be kind of the forerunner of the kinds of things that we will continue to do to enable all of us being able to get together and share in satsang, which is, there isn't any more core message of Ram Dass's than that.
Beautiful. Thank you. Mirabai, any last words for the moment?
Legacy, core message. What I think of is at the last retreat, I was wearing a T-shirt made by great people at Black Lotus Rising. You know them? Mm-hmm. And it said, love is my legacy.
Mm.
And that sums it up for me.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both so much for joining me today and for all of your tremendous work and love. To learn more about Ram Dass's teachings and life, you can visit www.ramdass.org. And thank you to all of you who've been listening. This has been the Metta Hour podcast, which Raghu, by the way, originated from the Be Here Now network. May you be safe, may you be healthy, may you be happy, and may you live with ease.
Hey, folks. Thanks for listening. To learn more about Sharon and her ongoing teaching schedule, as well as online courses and a free guided meditation, check out her website at sharonsalzberg.com.